Hello, iterative marketers. Welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast, where each week we give marketers and entrepreneurs actionable ideas, techniques, and examples to improve your marketing results. If you want notes and links to the resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. Now let's dive into the show. Hello and welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Robinson, and with me as always is the determined and gritty Elizabeth Aaron. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
Good. I don't mean gritty in the sense of sand.
I was wondering when you said that.
No. I'm reading Angela Duckworth's book, Grit, and it's fascinating. So definitely Thanks. Worth a pickup. I'll talk about it more when I'm further into it. So what's new in your world?
I have a 2-year-old, so we're sick yet again.
As are we in our family. I hope my voice continues for the duration of this podcast because my children did infect me again. So
it's like we live in a petri dish. It's just, I don't think we're ever going to get better. Mm-hmm. Maybe when they move out, I have no clue.
Well, I've got 3 kids, so I'm hoping that, you know, the third one here is getting all the germs the other two can bring home. And she's going to have the most phenomenal immune system by the time she's 4. And I think we'll be smooth sailing from there. So what are we talking about today if we're not talking about sick children?
We are going to talk about the PESO model. And we referred to this before in other episodes, and we'll refer to it in the future. And so given that, we decided it was probably a good idea to take some time and explain what it is. And I'm really excited we're talking about this. I mentioned this briefly to you before the podcast, but I was actually talking to a gentleman last night, John, who has a startup that he's self-funding. And he called me last night for some advice, and we were talking, and I said, have you heard of the PESO model? And he said, no. And I said, well, perfect, because we're recording a podcast on it tomorrow. So I will forward you the episode as soon as it's recorded. But you know, this really covers each of the different areas, paid, earned, shared, and owned. Sorry, thought I said that backwards for a second. And it's, I think it's important, and it's where a lot of marketers get hung up. And so I'm very excited that we're talking about this today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really underused by marketing. I think that it came out of PR, and it's underused by marketing, and I think it's a great asset. And I'm looking forward to the discussion today, especially the part where we go through the pros and cons of each particular aspect of the model, paid, earned, shared, and owned, and when each one shines, right? So you can layer them appropriately based on your objectives.
But before we do that, you're going to get into a bit of the background of where it came from. And I'm excited about this because as I was speaking with John last night, unfortunately, I think a lot of marketers have this idea that, you know, specifically when we talk about public relations and press releases, that a press release is this magical document that is going to help get their company all of this fame and fortune. And unfortunately, sort of the model and how we operate and the world in general has changed. And so that one document doesn't necessarily, it's more than just the words on the paper. There's a lot more behind it. And you're going to talk a little bit about that today.
Yes. And for those PR pros that have been around the block and have lived this because it was their world, if I make any misstatements here, please email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net with some corrections. We'll get them out in a future episode. But because I've worked around PR professionals much of my career, but I haven't actually been in the trenches. So if I misspeak, please send the correction.
And I was in the trenches, but I was in the trenches a while ago and for a short period of time. So I definitely don't have the expertise that I'm sure some of our listeners do.
So here's where PESO came from. It really came out of an evolution in the PR industry and has since started to gain a little bit of traction in marketing overall. It really comes back to a time period, you know, There was an inflection point that occurred kind of around 2008 where public relations had a huge sort of change in identity crisis all at once. And prior to 2008, the world was different. You really had basically 2 to 3 houses of marketing, right? You had your paid and you're earned, and those were obvious. Paid is when money is exchanged for getting your message out. And then earned is when no money is exchanged for getting the message out. So publishers would try and cater to this as well and try to make sure that they were separating their houses internally, at least the good publishers, right? Would make sure that there was a wall down the middle of the publisher's house, that you had ad sales on one side that handled the paid end of things, and then you had editorial on the other side, and you wanted to make sure that your paid wasn't influencing your editorial.
And thank you for clarifying good houses, because anyone who's worked in PR knows that there are those ones that you want to avoid, that aren't exactly playing above board. And there's a lot of, you know, tit for tat. So thank you for calling that out, because that is something that I think all PR professionals have endured.
Yes, yes. It was the ideal, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was this third house called owned media, and owned media is sort of stood on its own. This was the opportunity for a brand to develop its own voice, its own megaphone, build its own audience through its own publishing. And prior to 2008-ish, that wasn't that big of a deal anyway, because it was expensive. You had to launch your own news platform, your own like literally print publication. But as blogging came online, in particular, as branded blogs came online, all of a sudden every brand could be a publisher. And if it built up enough of an audience, it really could develop an owned media channel. And so owned became a thing as well. And for a long time, this is really how public relations operated. You know, they stayed within their earned channel and maybe dabbled in owned for the brands that could work, until things started to change. And there were a lot of things that contributed to these changes. As I mentioned, blogging came on, and that really amplified that owned component, as well as giving everyday people the opportunity to launch their own media platforms. And now all of a sudden you had citizen journalists, and where did they fit into this model? Social media gave everybody even further voice, because now you didn't have to know HTML and launch a blog, but now you could just start pushing stuff out into the world. And so now your consumers actually have a voice and an audience. Where do they fit into this model?
Well, and I remember back in probably 2005, 2006, working for a very large brand, and, you know, having that conversation of, do we get involved in social media? Do we set up a Facebook page? And whose responsibility is it? And we literally went back and forth, me in marketing, our advertising manager, and our PR manager, and kind of sort of argued who owned it. And none of us wanted it, because none of us really understood it at that point. And so, you know, that kind of added an extra little hiccup there.
It was a challenge. And a lot of public relations professionals were like, well, isn't social just basically earned, only with smaller audiences? Isn't it the same thing? And others would push back and say, no, it's its own animal. It's completely different. And this is also back at a time when you published something on Facebook as a brand, it actually got read. So it was a channel for pushing out content as well, that kind of sort of sat in the owned bucket. So it got really, really muddled. And it didn't help as well that the publishing model was starting to break down as well. So you had publishers that were folding, you had journalists moving around constantly. So all the relationships that these public relation professionals had built up over the years weren't quite as valuable, because the journalists weren't staying put, and it became harder to monetize those relationships. As well as those walls were falling between editorial and sales, and now we had branded content coming out, and content studios are launching within publishers, and all of a sudden it's like, well, what's the difference between paid and earned now? And all of this really led to sort of an identity crisis, because public relations was looking at the fact that now a lot of them had owned social. The algorithms were forcing them to turn that into a paid channel where they weren't supposed to be playing. The walls between paid and earned were falling with the publishers, and they needed a new model. And thankfully, one of the more prolific personalities or influencers within public relations, Ginny Dietrich, launched a book called Spin Sucks. There were a couple of other books coming out about the same time about this evolution of PR, but Ginny proposed a model called the Peso model that we're talking about today, that really allowed public relations to escape its little earned hole and look at marketing more holistically as it went to do its job.
So that, I think, is a great summary of sort of how this evolution has occurred. If we haven't lost any of our listeners yet, then now, I know we mentioned it earlier, but PESO, what it actually stands for is paid, earned, shared, and owned.
Yeah, and let's go through what each of those actually means, right? So they're all channels or groups of channels that we can use to reach our audience. And by putting them into these buckets, we're able to look at our marketing efforts through a different set of lenses, depending on what our objectives are, and understand the different ways we could go about getting our messages to our audience, right?
Yeah, definitely, and the different opportunities that exist, because even as we sort of look at these four channels, there is a lot of crossover between them. They're not mm-hmm. distinct and separate, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit as well.
Why don't we define what each one is? Do you want to start with paid?
Sure. So paid advertising, you mentioned this earlier, but it's when money is exchanged for getting our message out there, whether it's ad or content. We are paying someone to help us distribute that to our target audience.
And earned is exactly the opposite of that. It's when we're able to trade the value of the content itself to reach an established authorities audience. And I think that established authorities part is important because it's sort of what separates a media outlet from any old customer of ours, right? So they have to have an audience. They have to have some authority within that audience. And we give them some great content. Off of that great content, they turn around and distribute that content and give us a mention or even place some of our messaging.
The next one, shared, is kind of touches on earned a little bit in that an audience is sharing our content. They're putting it out there. The difference is that this is our own audience. And they could be sharing content that we've created. They could be sharing ads. We see that all the time. I remember when I was first had my son, I think it was Johnson & Johnson came out with one of their tearjerker ads about moms. And it was a full-on advertisement. It was a commercial that they shot. And I shared it with my network of moms like crazy because that really resonated with who I was. And so it can be content or it can be an ad that's been created.
Yeah. And this is the area where I think there's a little bit of ambiguity and not everybody is on the same page as to what shared means. Mm-hmm. Because as a distribution channel, that can also kind of include the brand's own social media properties and the brand sharing stuff on social in the hopes that it gets then reshared and distributed. That's harder to do these days without paying money. So it falls kind of more into paid these days, but again, that kind of comes into the gray area, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely some crossover there.
But the point is that it's everyday people. It's not media outlets that are sharing this or influencers or bloggers with huge audiences. It's your normal everyday customer.
And there's still a power there. I may not have a network of 100,000 or 300,000 people on my Facebook page, but I share it with, other people who have like interests to me and they share it with their network. And it's just this exponential burst of brand awareness that goes out there to ideally your target audience, because, a lot of times we're hanging out with people with like interests to our own.
And we'll talk about this more when we get to the pros and cons, but there's also a higher level of trust. I mean,
definitely.
I'm sure that your sisters trust your word more than they trust, Parents Magazine or, some other mommy blogger or even the New York Times.
I think it depends on which sister you talk to, but potentially.
And the last one is owned. So the O in PESO is owned media. We talked about that earlier. That's when you actually control the platform and the audience. So you are building up your own audience that comes to you to seek out your content. So they're subscribed to your newsletter or they have another means of getting your content when they want to. And you don't have to pay for that distribution.
So let's provide some examples to help, I think, put this into better context for our listeners. When we're talking about paid, we're talking about print and online ads. We're talking about outdoor advertising, sponsored stories. Native advertising falls into this category as well.
Yep. Earned is going to be coming back to more your traditional PR. So these are your press mentions, your influencer relations, even investor relations could be considered earned media.
Now, I think we're going to talk about this later, so I don't want to go too far into it. But again, none of these are, or very few of these are specific to just, you know, this one channel that they're talking about. And influencer relations, I think, is a really good example of this, where there's crossover between, you know, paid and some of our paid and shared. And so we're going to get into that a little bit later. It's not, these aren't necessarily distinct buckets that don't have any crossover.
So your shared is going to be your, these are your own brand's social accounts, because they're a means to get stuff out there to be reshared and retweeted, et cetera. Other examples would be like sweepstakes that you run where people have to go and share content to participate, or other efforts to encourage shared sharing of your own content. Online reviews would fall into this area, as well as even basic referral programs, you know, trying to spark that word of mouth. It really falls into that shared bucket.
And then owned is exactly, it's the channels that you own, the channels that you control that no one can take away from you or shouldn't be able to take away from you. It's going to be things like your blog. It's going to be your podcast, print magazines. You know, the anyone who's a Costco member, you get that monthly Costco Connection. Yeah. And it's their publication. And that's owned by them. And that's something that they control, all of the content and all of the messaging that goes within that publication.
So if we were to put this in the context of like a fictional scenario, right? What would this look like?
So if we're talking about, let's say, a charity looking to raise donations for medical research, they could apply the PESO model to help round out and create a very comprehensive marketing program that touches in each of these areas. And I think you came up with it, sort of an idea for a campaign of your own. Would you like to share your brainstorm here?
Sure. You don't want to take credit for fictitious campaign here? I totally blatantly ripped off the Ice Bucket Challenge. Yeah. Okay. So, So let's throw this fictitious campaign out there. We'll call it Purple Hair for the Cure, where, people pledge and goad their friends into dyeing their hair purple, to get the word out about some treatment, or raising money for research on some medical treatment. If we looked at this fictitious scenario, you'd have a paid channel to get things started for sure, right? So you'd have to put together some online advertising to get the word out about the program. Otherwise, nobody's going to know about it. So this could include banner ads, video promotion, maybe some Outbrain or Taboola placements of some blog content in order to get that sponsored content out there as well, in order to get ignite the challenge.
And then moving into earned, you'd be looking at press relations. So you're hoping to get a story about the campaign on, the Ellen Show, or on your local news, out to your local paper, or perhaps, a blogger that has a connection to this specific medical treatment, get them to write about it.
Mm-hmm. Shared media would include doing things like building a call to action into the campaign, encouraging those people participating to, in order to really qualify, to share their purple hair online, maybe in some public prominent place or something fun like that. So you're building in that shared component into the campaign itself to try and amplify the message among those people that are participating.
And then owned is going to include the official website, the Purple Hair for the Cure website. That is going to include information about the campaign. It's going to include touching videos of other people who've raised funds for this. This is the one that always gets me every time and makes me cry. But, you know, people that have, why they've contributed to this, why they've dyed their hair purple, and sort of the personal connection that it has to them, as well as regular updates on fundraising goals. And then there's an ability there for visitors to subscribe to get emails, updates, as well as information for making donations.
I want to circle back on something that Elizabeth brought up a couple of times. There is gray area. Not everything fits cleanly inside of one bucket. And I think the greatest poster child of this is influencers, right? Because if you have done any work in influencer marketing, you know that that's kind of both a paid channel and an earned channel. You're not going to get an influencer that doesn't believe in your product. It's not a good match if they don't. But at the same time, most of those influencers expect to be compensated, to be giving you those mentions and getting your name out there. So it falls on both sides of that bucket.
And one more thing before, I know we're getting ready to head to a charity break, but one more thing I want to say is any one of these channels on their own, has power and it's great. But when you combine all four of them together, you have created a comprehensive program that is touching people along multiple touch points in their day. They're hearing about it from their friends. They're seeing it on their local news. Banner ads are popping up. And now you've really created something that they cannot ignore, that they would have to literally be living under a rock to not understand what the Purple Hair Challenge is.
So without further ado, let's go and help some people.
Before we continue, I'd like to take a quick moment to ask you iterative marketers a small but meaningful favor and ask that you give a few dollars to a charity that's important to one of our own. This week's charitable cause was sent in by an anonymous listener. This listener asks that you make a contribution to 4PAWS 4ABILITY, an organization dedicated to enriching the lives of children with disabilities and veterans by training and placing quality task-trained service dogs. Learn more at 4PAWS4ABILITY.org or visit the link in the show notes. If you would like to submit your cause for consideration for our next podcast, please visit iterativemarketing.net/podcast and click the Share a Cause button. We love sharing causes that are important to you.
And we're back. So before the break, we went through a long and rambling history of public relations to finally get to what the peso model was. We gave you a few examples so we could make it tangible. Now let's talk about how you should decide where to really put your efforts for a given marketing program, which channel groups or channels are going to be work well for you under certain circumstances or others. Do you want to start off with some of the pros to, we'll start with paid, and you want to start with some of the pros? Maybe you can be the pro person, Elizabeth. I'll be the con person. I'll stay in the negative camp.
Ooh, okay. That sounds good. I get to be so positive here. So when we're talking about paid media, one of the really fabulous benefits of this is it's very scalable. The more money you spend, the more distribution you have. And so if you've got a limited budget, you can really, really use this to help define and create a program that fits within the budget that you have, but then still reaches your audience. And there's a lot of different ways that you can scale this, whether it's based on the audience that you're targeting, the geography that you're targeting, the frequency of your advertising. But again, it's very scalable. The other thing is it's very reliable. You know you are creating these ads, you are putting them out there, so you know that you are getting guaranteed exposure for the exact message that you want people to be receiving. And finally, it's fast, especially when we're looking at digital media. Media that you place today is going to be in front of your audience today. You know, print advertising is obviously going to have a little bit of a longer lead time, but again, it's very quick, and you get to decide the time frame that it's running. It's up to you when that appears in market.
Now, there are cons to paid advertising as well. Mm-hmm. So when you look at your paid channel, it's lower trust. Everyone's a little bit skeptical when they see an ad. They know it's an ad. They're not necessarily going to believe it, at least not on the surface. So it's not as effective as other channels from that standpoint. It can be expensive, particularly as you try to scale it. So, as you reach more audience, it's going to cost you more. So if you need to get something out to a broad group of Americans or even globally, you're going to have to pay for that. I think one of the biggest downfalls is it's very ephemeral. When you stop paying for advertising, it doesn't take very long for the benefits to start to wear off. You're going to have some residual brand equity, but the ads go offline, people are going to stop clicking on them. That newspaper gets tossed in the garbage, people are going to stop looking at it. So when you turn off the tap, the water stops flowing right away.
When we look at earned media, there are definitely some benefits to using that as well. And the first one, and I think this is the one that sort of pops out when we first talk about this, is it's very authoritative. It's not just you talking about your brand. Someone else is coming in and saying, yes, this is something that you should be paying attention to. It's giving you some third-party authority that, you know, money cannot buy. And so there's definitely a benefit of the authority benefit attached to earned media. One of the others is that it's cost-effective. You have the ability to leverage the size and trust of a very established audience. And my friend John, who I was speaking with last night, a national publication within the industry they're targeting is giving them a write-up. So this falls under earned media. They're an unestablished company, and now someone is coming and saying, hey, take notice of these guys. That's not something that they can buy. That's not something that it doesn't have that trust behind it. And now this audience is going to say, this publication I trust trusts this company. I should check them out. And then finally, there's some long-term benefits of it. You know, unlike the digital media or paid media, when it stops running, it sort of disappears. Past press mentions or placements can live on forever. They can be referenced you know, really create some long-term SEO benefits. So there's definitely some long-term benefits associated with your earned media.
And of course, with all of the pros, there are the cons. So there are downsides to your earned media as well. It's not as reliable. You can't really guarantee a press mention. And particularly if you start to get into more of your commercial type messages, it could fall flat altogether. So it's somewhat hit or miss. Certainly the better relationships you have with the press and the better your, I hate that, I know PR hates the word pitch, but the better your content is, the more likely it's going to get placed, but it's still a gamble. And then other cons include that it can be hard to scale. So it's not like if you just put more money or more effort towards PR, you're automatically going to get that much more reach or impressions. It's gonna top off at some point. There's a limited number of outlets that are going to run with your story, and then you're done, right? While it can be very cost effective, it can also be a bit expensive if you're going outside to get it done. So it's not expensive in the actual like media dollars. It's expensive in time and resources. And so if you're doing it yourself internally, it's going to be a big time suck. If you're going outside, you're going to have to pay some public relations professionals money to do this on your behalf with limited guarantees in what they're going to accomplish.
Thank you for mentioning this, because I feel like a lot of, especially small businesses, you know, think that earned media is free media, but it's not. You may not be necessarily paying the dollars to get your message out there, but there is a big time investment, especially if you're doing this right. There's a big time investment in making those connections, building those relationships, and getting that media placed or that message placed.
I think the key to understand is it's not a direct correlation between the amount of time or money you put in versus the amount of reach and benefit and trust and message you're going to get out. It really depends back on the value of that content and then the relationships of the person who's putting that to work, right? So if you've got high value content and you're either working with a public relations professional who has great relationships or you personally have great relationships, you are going to get that much more bang for that time investment than if you're working with content that maybe is more commercial in nature or isn't as valuable or isn't as good, or you don't have the relationships.
Jumping into shared media, there is a very high level of trust in shared media. And you touched on this earlier, but people trust their peers more than they're going to trust media or an ad, even more than they may trust the earned media that you're getting, a recommendation from a friend or a parent or a coworker or someone who's in a similar situation who they trust and know and understand is going to have a much higher value to them than you know, a publication or even paid advertising. Also, there's low cost. The ability to amplify your message is tied to its quality, but not necessarily the dollars behind it. And so again, if you're putting out great content that is of interest to your audience, then while there is a cost of producing that content, you can get it out and reach people in a way that if you were trying to do this through paid could cost you quite a bit of money.
But along with that, really cost-effective reach is, on the flip side of that, is it's really unreliable. I don't know how many clients have come to us and said, well, can we produce a viral video? And the answer is no. We can produce a really great video and we can do our research to set everything up so that we think this is along the lines of something that could go viral. But at the end of the day, there have been studies to really get into the probability of something going viral and being a shared media success, and it's really unpredictable, really unreliable, and it really comes down to chaos theory and chance. So it's not something you can count on. It's also unscalable. It's not a matter of, well, if we just produce more media or more content, then that means that we're going to get more shared amplification, and it doesn't work that way. You are limited based on the audience that you have and their audiences as they share their content, and you're only going to get the reach that you're going to get.
And finally, looking at the last owned media is low risk in that you own that channel that you're talking on. So you can't be shut down by the medium when its policies change or the platform dies. If the algorithm changes, you know, there's no algorithm that's going to change that's going to impact whether or not your content is being seen. So very low risk. It's something that you own. And also it's a long-term asset. Again, you own it. And so the evergreen content that you're creating today is going to draw audiences as long as that content is relevant. And your audience will continue to serve you as long as you nurture that audience. And so this is really a long-term asset. And you've talked about long-term assets in some past podcasts and blog posts. We'll link to that in the show notes. But definitely a pro of owned media.
Owned media has one huge, huge con, though. It's slow. In other words, if you don't have an audience today, you're looking at 6 months to a year to build that audience to the point where you can really put it to work. And so this is not something you can just turn on overnight, and it's going to take time. The other thing is owned media cannot operate in a silo. It's not just build it and they will come, right? You're going to have to pay for some distribution at least early in the life cycle of the owned media in order to build that audience. At some point, that audience will refer others and it will start to grow organically. But in the beginning, if nobody knows about it, nobody's going to be talking about it, and nobody else is going to know about it. So you're going to have to layer on some paid, earned, or shared on top of your owned in order to be able to get it to ignite or grow.
Thank you for mentioning these, because I think in my experience and talking to some of our clients and clients I've had in the past, this is the biggest misconception. You know, it's not a build it and they will come. It's build it and do a bunch of other work and then they'll start coming. But there's that step in between that has to happen before that audience is gonna start to interact with your content.
So how can we as marketers take this peso model and really put it to work for us?
Well, I think the first thing we need to keep in mind is we need to try not to limit ourselves to our comfort zones.
Yeah, I think all of us have a tendency, you know, to be most comfortable and put the most effort in the bucket, the paid, earned, shared, or owned, that we have the most experience and have experienced the most success within. And that can put on some blinders where we stop seeing the opportunities in the other buckets. And so by having the peso model at our disposal, we can now take a look at our efforts and say, where are there other opportunities? Where can I create synergies where layering a shared component on top of what I'm doing from a paid component could amplify what we're doing even further? Where can I introduce earned in addition to paid, earned, or paid, shared, and owned, right? So where can we layer this together in order to really create something amazing?
Yeah, to your point, it really does force us, or I shouldn't say necessarily force us, it gives us the opportunity to look outside of our comfort zones. And not only that, but it gives us the structure and the framework of what to do once we do that. Because again, we're not exactly sure where to start. And the peso model sort of gives you those connections. It connects the dots for you so that it's easy for you to categorize and budget and allocate your resources in a way that you can take steps forward. With that being said, I do want to take a step back and recognize that you don't necessarily want to do all of these at the same time either. If you have not done these before and you don't have the infrastructure set up and you don't have the content set up, trying to accomplish each of these is not going to be a successful tactic. So it's completely okay to start where you're comfortable. It's just don't stop there. Make sure you keep moving forward.
And for us, in the context of this podcast and in the writing that we do on iterativemarketing.net, we refer to the peso model a lot in order to make sure that we're not becoming myopic or putting on blinders in how we talk about marketing and iterating on marketing. We want to make sure that we're looking at marketing as a whole and not limiting ourselves to just digital or not limiting ourselves just to paid, that we really are working to apply continuous improvement across the gambit.
So that brings us to the end of what has turned out to be pretty long episode today. Thank you for sticking with us. We appreciate it. Quickly, just to summarize, you know, times have changed. It is not the same PR and marketing world that it was 10, 15, or even 20 years ago. And so we need to find a new model to organize our marketing efforts. And thankfully, we have that in the peso model. And that it gives us a great sense of how we can look at our organization through different lenses and find different opportunities to help to promote our brand and our products.
To reiterate, PESO stands for paid, earned, shared, and owned. And each channel has its own set of pros and cons. The beauty comes when you start to layer them on top of each other to make one compensate for the other.
And we as marketers should be open to adopting this model to help us put some order to what we're doing every day in our marketing efforts and recognize that there are other opportunities out there, even if they scare us a little bit. It's something that we may want to use the PESO model to try and extend our marketing efforts until we find appropriate mediums that really work to help us get our message out.
I want to thank everyone for making time for us this week. If you did get this podcast through a paid channel, please come back to our owned channel at iterativemarketing.net/podcast and subscribe. If you are in the media and want to mention us, please feel free. We'd love the earned media. And finally, share our podcast with your friends so that we can get some shared media value out of this as well. Again, thank you all for making time. Until next week, onward and upward.
If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory. If you want notes and links to resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There, you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is at @ITER8IVE, or email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net. The Iterative Marketing Podcast is a production of Brilliant Metrics, a consultancy helping brands and agencies rid the world of marketing waste. Our producer is Heather Ullman with transcription assistance from Emily Bechtel. Our music is by Seastock Audio Music Production and Sound Design. You can check them out at seastockaudio.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, onward and upward.